Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, it's day 11 of the Australian Open, and our women's final lineup is set. It will be Wimbledon champion Elena Rybakina against first-time major finalist Aryna Sabalenka. It is 1 minute past midnight, and you find us in the media cafe. Myself, Matt, David, and for the first time this tournament, The Daily Telegraph's Simon Briggs. Hello, Simon.
Hello. Hey. I worked out that I think I only come on when I'm previewing a Rybakina final.
It's only the second one she's been in.
Yeah. I think last time I was accused of being a bit mean about her because I think I said that everyone's going to be pulling for Ons Jabeur. But today I did really want Rybakina to win because I thought that the two players... the two players today who I thought had a potential to be like massive stars going forward for a while, and she's one of them. So I was hoping she was going to come through.
It's an interesting final in a lot of different ways. We've got a lot to talk about today, haven't we, Simon? I know you've been listening throughout the course of the fortnight. You've heard your mentions.
Oh, I've been well served with with mentions. Been very delighted by that. Thank you.
I got a hard time from Matt Futterman today for not liking Blake Shelton. To be clear, I have no particular feelings about Blake Shelton and his music. On first glance or first listen, it doesn't sound very good. But, you know, I've not deep dived. But anyway, Matt Futterman informs me that he's
a big fan.
He's at least okay.
Yes, Matt likes him because he, quote, used to live in the South.
Mm.
And apparently,
as if it's a sort of prerequisite of living in the South.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a prerequisite of being a country singer, surely.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I know you've been listening over the course of the fortnight, Simon, so you'll know that we are sponsored this Australian Open by On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. Will you be in Indian Wells, Simon?
Unlikely. It's always a tricky week for the Telegraph because it coincides with the last round of the Six Nations, as well as Champions League football, so you can't get anything in the paper or on the website.
Well, you won't get to talk about Elena Rybakina playing in the Indian Wells final with us then, because we're going to be there.
She'll be disappointed.
I guess she won't be in it, because Simon's not there.
Yeah, she should fund me.
She's not interested in being in it if Simon's not there to hype it up.
Well, we'll be there. Elena Rybakina will be there. Will you be going to Miami, Simon?
Yes, I've booked a place in Miami for some extortionate rate. I'm on a sofa bed.
Oh, Simon. Well, that leads me nicely to the competition prize that On Location in Steve Fogel's International Tennis Tours are offering one lucky Tennis Podcast newsletter subscriber. No sofa beds for our competition winner.
Can Simon enter?
I'll be entering, I was thinking that.
You can win a three-night stay at the official Miami Open. This feels like rubbing salt in your wounds now, Simon. A three-night stay at an official Miami Open tournament hotel for two guests. You could bring a guest.
That's Mike Dixon.
With tickets to two full day and night sessions, premium hospitality and transportation to the venue, all included. Breakfast with Simon. Would you like to take a turn at semi-obscure tennis player name here?
Ooh. I've gone completely blank.
That's the Daily Telegraph's tennis correspondent, unable to name a tennis player.
I just filed a report that said tennis report dash yes, it's actually tennis this time. I mean, I'm more likely to have breakfast with a man in a suit. That's kind of most of my appointments.
Would anybody else like to submit a sort of B/C list tennis player?
I'm going to go for Miomir Kecmanovic.
Didn't he do really well in Miami last year?
Are you saying he's not obscure
enough?
He did.
He beat Ujaliasim, I think. Played a great match with Carlos Alcaraz.
Mm.
Okay, then I'll go for Victoria Kozmova then.
Okay. I'm not sure she's making the main draw. Anyway, if you'd like to enter the competition, the link to subscribe to the newsletter is in our show notes. The URL to enter the competition is toursfortennis.com/podcast. toursfortennis.com/podcast. There's also the 5% discount code on all Steve Fogel's international tennis tours throughout 2023. That is available to all friends of the tennis podcast. Now, the two women's semi-finals that we have seen tonight. We started with Elena Rybakina beating Victoria Azarenka 7-6, 6-3. And we finished with, in terms of scoreline and kind of pattern of the match, a fairly similar clash between Aryna Sabalenka and Magda Linette. Sabalenka winning 7-6, 6-2. The set of the night, without question, I think, as much as the first set of Sabalenka against Linette was quite compelling, because it was watching Sabalenka desperately trying to find her game and settle her nerves, the set of the night, without question, the first set between Azarenka and Rybakina, which was a scorcher, I thought. David, you watched it from the Five Live commentary box.
Yeah, and it was interesting, because a number of times I thought it was over one way or the other, and it turned out not to be. Really, in terms of a differential in power, Rybakina just was knocking her off the court. I mean, early on, it's quite a sight to see her ball strike. I mean, I was watching Azarenka and I was thinking, you know, here's somebody who's played Serena Williams at her peak and been a proper rival of hers in two brilliant US Open finals, but I'm not sure she's seen a faster ball than this coming, because how flat it goes and the wingspan and everything else and the serve. And then there were moments when the serve completely disintegrated from Rybakina, and she felt the nerves today in a way that I didn't really remember her feeling the nerves at Wimbledon. When she was up in a set, she missed eight serves in a row. She suddenly was in trouble in that first set. I mean, I think at 5-all, love 40. And I think Azarenka will have a few regrets there, because she had a chance, you know.
Yeah, she did. She was sitting on a second serve return on one of those break points in that 5-all game, and had a backhand and went for it cross court, netted it, and you kind of thought in that moment she might regret that, and I think she definitely did, because as you said, that was a period of the match where Rybakina just couldn't serve. She'd been 5-3 up. She had a set point. She had a volley that she played a little bit tentatively, and Azarenka reached it and fired a fantastic forehand up the line to save that set point. And then for about the next 10 or 15 minutes, Azarenka was really the one kind of in charge and with the momentum. But when she didn't take those break points, Rybakina kind of settled again. Finally found her serve. I think it was at the 11th attempt. I think she missed 10 first serves in a row. And then Rybakina just got ahead in the tiebreak and managed to maintain that lead. But really, I think I agree. That was the set of the night, and it did feel like Azarenka kind of needed to win it, though, with the chances that she did have. But it's such an awesome sight seeing Rybakina up close. I didn't actually watch her on court at Wimbledon last year, but seeing her here, it's funny, the sort of main thing that I take from it is the sound of the ball. You know, it just sounds different off her racket. So pure, so clean. And yeah, the sort of the way she rolls over the shot with that sort of long extension of her arms is an awesome sight. And I think if her Wimbledon run was a little bit surprising, I guess, in a way, there's kind of felt nothing that surprising about this. Sort of every time she stepped on the court here, I've thought, yeah, she's looking really good, really strong, and she's beaten three major champions in a row now, hasn't she? Świątek, Ostapenko, and Azarenka. She had a tough draw and just come through it you know, so confidently. And even before that, she beat Collins, last year's finalist. Like, she's the real deal. We're backing her.
She stayed calm, didn't she, when things were ropey? And somebody said to me today that she's got a low heartbeat. Mm. And that did feel to be the case. Also, I thought she returned really well when she wasn't serving well.
Yeah, like if the best server on the women's tour can return like that,
yeah,
it's kind of trouble for
everyone.
Watch out,
everyone. The power is really interesting, though, because, of course, she is extremely powerful, Elena Rybakina. Those are big, weighty shots. And yet the way she produces that power makes it sort of fools you into thinking she's not a power player, because there's something so smooth and gentle about the way she produces that power, rolling over the ball somehow. It is a little, I know this is, Matt's going to balk at this, but it is a little Anisimova-esque on that backhand. Somehow the flight of the ball and the looseness of the stroke and the sort of lulling way it makes you feel like running water. Yeah,
timing, and obviously with the wingspan, and because it is such a fluid motion, a bit like the Serena Williams serve. Serena Williams is not explosively muscling that ball over. It is just a smooth stroke that is perfection.
And I'm sure we'll come on to Sabalenka in a minute, but what an interesting contrast that final is going to be, because Sabalenka, you really see her put the effort in to generate the power. They're both power players, but in very different ways.
Yeah, it's really not as simple as power player against power player, that, is it? How significant for you all was it tonight that Rybakina had been there and done it before, playing against somebody obviously that's a two-time Australian Open champion? I thought when her serve completely deserted her at the end of that first set, when she was in control and suddenly Azarenka hit a hot streak, I think, you know, had she had less experience in that situation, that could have all got away from her very, very quickly. That must feel very alarming when your biggest weapon, your most reliable weapon, just disappears on you for apparently no reason. I thought she did incredibly well to pull it together.
I almost felt like she was the more experienced one, didn't she, in that moment? Because Azarenka in second set, and moving on a bit in the match, her shoulders thumped a bit. She kind of stood and glared at her player box quite a little, and she was, you know, admonishing herself. And it was Rybakina. You can't really imagine Rybakina ever doing that. She never says anything good or bad on the court. She never.
They say a lot to her, but she says nothing
back.
Well,
that's the thing. You mentioned about her having the lowest heartbeat. It's a good job, really, to keep those people calm in her support team.
I think they feel that their job is to raise it, because otherwise she might just doze off.
Maybe.
I mean, the other thing about her is she's got a physique a little bit like Pliskova. But unlike Pliskova, she kind of gets down to the ball, doesn't she? She doesn't have that sort of stilt-legged movement. I think that's why her strikes are sweet, because she's got the leverage, but she's also a little bit, as you say, more fluid than Pliskova.
She also is very nice at the net as well. I mean, there were three occasions. One where I just was taken by how quick across the ground she was. I mean, her legs might not go that quickly, because she's got the big strides, but she got up to a drop shot from Azarenka that was played with disguise, and she had the deftness of the touch, plus she can volley.
Yeah, we were sitting with Chris Clary of the New York Times in the press seats, and his sort of take on the Rybakina movement is that she's generally slightly more comfortable moving forward than she is laterally.
And she missed quite a lot going out wide to her forehand, didn't she?
Exactly. Whereas if she's on her own terms coming into the net, she really sort of eats up that ground and can get quite close to the net and sort of use those softer hands than you think she's going to have
panic.
To hit some touch volleys. No, she doesn't. And I do think Azarenka maybe needed to exploit that lateral movement a bit more. I mean, I know that's an easy thing to say when the ball's coming at you as hard as it is from Rybakina, but when she did get the break in the first set, Azarenka, she did it with a lovely rally in which she hit some slice, and she sort of disrupted Rybakina in that game the same way she did to Pegula. She wasn't really able to carry that on through the match, and I think I did read her press conference transcript, Azarenka, and she seemed quite disappointed with how she'd played today. Like she didn't feel like she had her best tennis.
Yeah, it was an awkward press conference, wasn't it? And awkward for reasons outside of the tennis, which will tie into a topic that we'll get onto later with our geopolitical sport correspondent Simon Briggs over here. Let's talk about Aryna Sabalenka a bit, because I want to be able to talk about this matchup in the final. Obviously, we'll give it a full preview tomorrow evening after the men's semi-finals and ahead of the women's final on Saturday. But Aryna Sabalenka, a very, very similar scoreline for her against Magda Linette, but quite a different first set, I think, even though it went to the tiebreak. She stormed through the tiebreak, won it. She was 6-love, wasn't she? Ended up winning it 7-1. You tweeted, I think, Matt, unbelievably impressive that Aryna Sabalenka ended up missing that set. She didn't really have a backhand for most of that first set.
Yeah, I just felt like if any set of conditions were right for Sabalenka to sort of lose a set, they were all there in that first set. She came out misfiring pretty recklessly. It's a pretty cold evening in Melbourne tonight. We had to...
We made some bad clothing choices
today. We had
today.
To have an emergency dash to pick up our jumpers halfway through that first semi-final.
I'd lost circulation in my hands after the first set.
We're sitting inside for a reason.
Exactly,
tonight.
Yeah. And I just think those sort of slightly chilly, breezy conditions were not great for Sabalenka. Linette was playing really well, you know, the smart tennis that we've come to see from her all tournament. David, you were in the stadium and mentioned just how much the crowd were on Linette's side and enjoying her. There's always a big Polish contingent sort of following all the Polish players.
David said the crowd love, in all they caps, do. Magda Linette.
They did. I mean, I think for a start, you know, you've got this player who is nigh on half the size of her opponent, and nobody's ever heard of her before, right? And she's not making enormous noise when she hits the ball. And that's not a criticism of Sabalenka. Sabalenka has this feeling of being overwhelming, as though her power could just destroy you and just knock you out the stadium. And yet she was standing up to it, and she's redirecting the play, and she's winning rallies that you can't believe she's winning. And it's just... It's a real underdog feel that they loved it. Mm.
So, I mean, given that, given how Sabalenka was playing, given the conditions, and I think most importantly, given Sabalenka's record in Slam semi-finals coming into this, 0 wins, 3 losses, and, you know, the one that always stands out for me is her performance against Leila Fernandez at the US Open, which was just a tornado of unforced errors. And she just was so anxious and nervous, just sort of unable to play her game. Given all of that, the fact that she then found her game in that first set, I thought was really, really impressive. And, you know, by the end, she was, as you said, in that tie break, she was playing the sort of tennis she's been playing all tournament. I just love how she has got a handle on the sort of mental and emotional side of her game without reining in any of the power. You know, she's still just as eye-catching and overwhelming, and she's just sort of brought everything else under control. It's an amazing sight. And she then stormed through the second set pretty comfortably, really.
I really love watching her, because she's like the sort of tennis player that I'd want to be if I could choose, just like Dominic Thiem. Like, it's full throttle all the time. You know, I like watching kind of the Fabrice Santoro deaf players, but I wouldn't want to play like that. I want to just be able to crush every ball and just kind of trample on my opponent with enormous feet like those players do. She's kind of like a lion when she's doing what she was doing in the tiebreak. It's just spectacular tennis. The freedom of those swings when she's going.
She's actually got better timing than I think maybe people realise, because there's so much noise and so much drama and all the rest of it. You actually look at her racket skills. I mean, she hit one clean backhand winner with a slice cross court late on.
That was a collector's item. I remember that.
It was gorgeous the way she did it. And I realised, crikey, she's got good hands.
She's a very successful doubles player.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I mean, and those are her two Grand Slam finals, aren't they? That she won them both as well. Just quickly, what sort of tennis player are you?
I'm cagey.
Sabalenka, and you want to be team, what actually are you?
No, very conservative.
Stylish.
Oh, really?
Give me a name. Elise Cornet?
What? I don't have strapping. possibly, you know, I suppose I am slightly permanently injured, so I suppose that would be one comparison.
David Goffin? What do we think?
Well, he's got a single-handed backhand.
Well, you've played with Simon.
Yeah,
so
and we're playing again in about 11 hours.
What player would you describe him as?
Well, he's been described on our Instagram as Dan Evans in the
past. Yeah, Evo-esque would be me on my very best
day. Dan Evans isn't conservative, though.
He's loving that description.
He does play percentages to some extent, and he's got a method of playing, and he doesn't have big weapons when he gets to the end of sets, which is why he has a problem closing, which is something else I would identify with.
Glad they asked now.
And just going back to Sabalenka, I must say the pattern of this match was actually quite similar to a lot of the matches she's played, and maybe something to look out for in the final, in that she actually isn't coming out all guns blazing. She's been a breakdown to Rogers, to Bencic, and to Linette, and she was 3-3 with Vekic after about 45 minutes. Like, it does seem that those opening stages are the time where you've got to try and capitalise, but no one yet has been able to, you know, build a big lead. And eventually Sabalenka's power has sort of switched on and it's all calibrated and she's ended up sort of overwhelming everyone. Mm-hmm. She hasn't lost a set this year in Adelaide or here in Melbourne. But yeah, maybe something to watch out for in the final, whether, you know, the nerves of a first Grand Slam final as well might feed into that. But once she gets going, it kind of feels like she's unstoppable. But there is a chance kind of at the beginning of the match.
And at the end, I mean, she faltered at the end.
Yeah.
She saw three match points come and go, but it wasn't just that. There was really a stiff arm just coming down the home straight, and that will be much more powerful in the final.
Yeah.
But also, I wonder how many rallies there are going to be. I mean, we talked about how they do move well for being the size of player they are, but they're not either great defenders, are they? So it could be average rally 3.5 shots.
Mm. Could be a lot of winners, a lot of unforced errors. Mm.
A couple of things struck me when Sabalenka was toiling away in that first set. First of all, I thought, if she loses this one, if she becomes 0-4 in Grand Slam finals, including one now against, with all due respect, Magda Linette, she's heavy favourite there. I was starting to think that's baggage she won't overcome. It started to feel even higher stakes as the match went on, especially as she was playing badly. Magda Linette was playing very well, but Sabalenka, it was poor from her in the opening stages. It was nervy, it was poor, it was anxious, it wasn't low heart rate stuff. And given all of that, that must have been in the back of her mind thinking, oh my God, I can't blow this one as well. Very impressive from her. And the second thing was the walk of Magda Linette, which of course they tracked back to the locker room because they do that here. There's cameras everywhere you go. And on one hand, I thought, well, what a tournament. So much better than she ever could have expected when she was coming here. But also, so, you know, wonderful from that perspective. But also, she's probably thinking that
was it.
That was it.
That was the chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She might get another one, but I think we all know, and she probably knows, because she's not doing anything differently, is she? She's been the best version of herself. She's been incredibly focused and fit and strong and got better as every match has gone on. But the stars have aligned for her this tournament, and the chances of that happening again are very slim. And there was something really heartbreaking about, you know, just seeing that.
Especially as we now know that she really did want more. She wasn't satisfied in the previous round.
And I do love that.
Yeah.
You know how much I hate it when people are just happy to be there. Want more, always.
But it wasn't on a racket at any stage.
No. When is it ever against Serena Sabalenka?
Was it?
And that is interesting, isn't it? Because both of these two players we're going to see in the final, they're used to having everything on their racket.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it's easy to kind of think of Sabalenka as the power player because everything about her is hurricane-like. But Rebecca might do it quietly, but she's just as aggressive.
It could be the heartbeat that wins it, because, I mean, Sabalenka's all over the shop. Her ECGs would be like the Himalayas.
Can I tell you that Sabalenka leads the head-to-head 3-0?
Okay.
They've been close, though, I think.
They have been close. The last two meetings were 2021, Wimbledon, and a tournament at the start of the year in Abu Dhabi, which I think might have been one of those COVID pop-up tournaments. And they were both three-setters, but still, Sabalenka steps onto the court thinking, I've never lost to this person. I think just mentally that's pretty big.
I think she'll take anything she can get, really. And mentally, I think she's been incredibly strong. Magdalene Nett is on her way. Sorry, Magdalene, we're busy.
we're tied up, Magdalene.
But I mean,
sorry.
I was watching her out the window when she lets those three match points come and go. And I was just curious, well, what's she going to do? And she just sort of, she gave a face. A sort of face. Another one's gone. And then she just took a big deep breath. She went, right, okay, let's go. And it was clearly a proper reset. She'd worked out, how do I reset if things go wrong? And she's nailed it. I mean, until that last game, she'd hit one double fault in the whole match. This is somebody who's hitting a dozen a match and more.
That is, I mean, we have talked about it quite a lot, but it's been at least a couple of rounds since we've talked about the extraordinary turnaround in Aryna Sabalenka's serving.
Well, she had a mild relapse, didn't she, against Donna?
Yeah, I think she was 9.
I think
double
that was contagious.
Donna had hit like 14, and Sabalenka only hit 5 in the first set and a half, and then a rash of them came at the end. But overall, I mean, she's tidied that up an incredible amount.
She brought on the biomechanist.
No, I mean, but it's so many things that were holding her back have gone. I mean, she's visibly fitter, she's visibly mentally stronger, she's fixed her serve. Those are the three issues that you might have questioned. I mean, no one could ever say that her game was anything other than utterly compelling. Oh, and the Aussie crowd aren't quite heckling her as much. You remember the first time she was here, played Ashley Barty in the first round, and they did the all echoing thing. That was the thrust of my interview with her in 2019. Is it 2019?
Maybe, was it 2020 or 19, something like that.
And it was coming back to Australia. And how do you think you'll go? And are you kind of concerned about it? But I was really just wanting to meet her because she'd exploded onto the scene, and we thought that she was potentially going to win a major that season.
How did you find her then?
Really good to talk to. I mean, she's very engaging. I think I've heard you mention that this fortnight she's dialed back on the press conferences as well, and that's part of trying to lower down her emotional temperature. And you know, whatever works. I suspect if she does get a breakthrough and does manage to put her game on the court more regularly, that might return. I don't think she would necessarily remain kind of muted for too long, because it's not really her.
Yeah,
but I think it's a pretty smart call right now, this minute.
Yeah, she definitely has been guarded. I mean, her demeanour's been friendly enough, but in terms of, you know, the length of her answers, she has seemed guarded. I think in the on-court interviews as well as in the press conference room, perhaps not so much today, but after the quarterfinal victory, she was a little bit abrupt on court and in the press conference room. It was pretty businesslike from her. There's probably a wariness about, and this will only increase after what's happened in the last 24 hours, which we'll talk about in a moment, a wariness about questions relating to her nationality. Even though I know that the Netflix episode that centres around her that's coming in the second half of the season of Breakpoint very much does get into the events of last year, the war, the ban on Russian and Belarusian athletes and its impact on Aryna Sabalenka. So she obviously is prepared to talk about it and go there, but that's obviously a very controlled editorial environment.
She's not done it in a press conference.
I don't
at any
so,
stage.
No.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Victoria Azarenka was asked about her nationality in press conference, and that was how it got awkward earlier. The reason that is particularly in the spotlight is because last night, during Novak Djokovic's win over Andrei Rublev, one fan in the crowd who'd started the match wearing a Novak Djokovic T-shirt at some stage peeled that T-shirt off to reveal the Z symbol that is representative of support for the Russian army and their illegal invasion of Ukraine. That man was spoken to by a steward, but he was allowed to put a jacket on and remain in place. And he actually then went to get an autograph from Djokovic after the match, wearing that jacket over the Z T-shirt. Then, a little later, pictures and video emerged of a small but very vocal gathering of fans outside the Rod Laver Arena, most of them brandishing just normal Serbian flags, but a handful bearing either Russian flags or flags with Vladimir Putin's face on or paraphernalia with the Z symbol on it. Then, not long after that, a piece of footage emerged of Novak Djokovic's father, Sorjan, posing for a photo with a few members of that pro-Russian mob, and was heard saying, "Long live the Russians," to them as he was saying goodbye. And needless to say, Simon, this has been quite a story over the last 24 hours.
Yeah, I mean, we thought that Novak had done a very good job of quietening all the turbulence that followed the deportation saga. He probably felt that everything was nice and tranquil, and now there's a whole new issue for him to discuss. And the press conference when he comes off the court after his semi-final tomorrow will be very interesting. We were speculating whether he might be wise to open with a statement so that he gets that out of the way. Last night, he answered about five questions, but none of them were about the demonstration. At that stage, no one knew about his father's involvement in it, which was fleeting, but still did have a sense of approval for the pro-Putin demonstrators. So the whole thing, it doesn't reflect well on the tournament, which allowed this to go on for, I can't say exactly how long, but it's felt like much longer than it should have done. They ought to have been ready for this because they've got sheets up on all the gates with all the things that are prohibited, including any regalia with Zeds on. I mean, clearly the chap with the shirt, you can't strip search everybody. That's very tricky. Mm. But there were a lot of flags. Some were Russian flags. One was a flag of the biker gang called the Night Wolves, who the ringleader of the demonstration seemed to be affiliated to in some way. And then there was a flag with Vladimir Putin's face on it, which was probably the most kind of shocking image. So the whole thing was pretty ugly and didn't reflect well on anyone.
Did it feel predictable?
No.
Were you expecting something like this to transpire?
Really wasn't.
Over the course of this tournament?
No, I mean, I had a sense that Serbia, with its history of connection to Russia, has been more politically favourable. I mean, that's been talked about in Europe, just as a stance of the Serbian government, the Serbian people, but totally never imagined that there'd be a pro-Putin demonstration here. It later emerged that there was a character called the Aussie Cossack who'd almost sent out a call to arms on his video channel. He's actually, I think he's in the Russian embassy at the moment, evading Australian police after allegedly assaulting a man at a pro-peace rally. But he put out a call to arms saying, "Get down to Melbourne Park tomorrow night, and Tennis Australia better be ready because it's going to happen. And it probably, it's understandable he didn't see that, but looking back now, perhaps that was a message they could have picked up.
Victoria Azarenka, when quizzed about this in her press conference, now obviously she's just lost a semi-final match at a Grand Slam, so that absolutely needs to be factored into all of our takes of what she had to say. But the gist of her responses, which were curt to say the least, was it's not fair to be asking players about this. It's got nothing to do with us. We have no power over what these people are doing, whether they're fans of ours or from our country or not. Is that a fair, rational take?
I agree with that, unless your family member or team member becomes involved in the protest. And at that point, I think there is a element to which you probably need to address a question on it. I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just saying that as long as you're staying isolated from the events, then that's a perfectly...
Isn't there a difference, though, between blame? I don't think anybody would blame any players for anything like that we saw last night here at Melbourne Park. But players do have a platform and they do have power. And, you know, when it suits them, they use that and acknowledge that. And this is a situation where an anti-war message, regardless of whether what your a family member might have done, an anti-war message, please don't, if you're a fan of me, please don't be expressing support for this illegal war, would go an awful long way. Actually, in this situation, the players do have some control and maybe even responsibility.
I mean, in this instance, it's obviously Djokovic fans who were leading this mini rally. I don't know whether he would have had any idea that was even plausible.
Not in advance, but now, I'm saying now, doesn't he have some power?
You made the point just now, perhaps a statement at the start of his press conference might be a good idea. And I do think a request to not have his name or his matches associated with any demonstration, it would be a good idea from his perspective. And I don't necessarily, you know, because it's difficult because he won't want to alienate people that support him generally, but I think that would be a perfectly fair request from him if that's how he feels about it. From Azarenka's perspective, I could understand why she wouldn't want to use the words that you've just used, for instance, because she is Belarusian and she is in a very, very difficult position in that regard. I think the way Andrei Rublev has handled it throughout is probably about as far as one can reasonably expect somebody to go. And I think he has handled it very well. I mean, if somebody would go further, amazing. But I can kind of understand why they don't.
But not many have gone as far as Andrei Rublev.
No, I know, I agree. And I mean, Daria Kasatkina, I think, another one. Who,
yeah.
My admiration for them is immense.
And I think the point about Djokovic opening with a statement tomorrow, like, that would show that he sees it as important. He's not just waiting for a question on it. And also he's... You know,
not he waiting can, to avoid one not, either.
Exactly. And just take some control of the situation. Like, I think it would be in his interest to do that. So it'd be interesting to see whether he does.
It's going to be very interesting, isn't it? I mean, just in terms of the match, that this will be, you know, on his mind ahead of, you know, one of his biggest matches in a long time. How can it not be? Particularly with
thing,
the implication of his dad
I think
that's very awkward for him.
I think Mike Dixon from the Mail tweeted, all he wanted was a nice, quiet life for the next few days to swimmingly go and win his 10th Australian Open. And
so, thanks, Dad.
And then this happens.
Yeah.
You know, so from his perspective, this is a bit of a nightmare. And, yeah, it's... It, the only looking at the players that are left and the way Djokovic is playing and how the hamstring appears to be under control, does only feel like something outside could destabilize his efforts to win this game. Because if he plays his best tennis, sorry, Tommy Paul and Stefanos Tsitsipas and Karen Khachanov are not going to beat the guy.
Well done.
Thanks for hyping the men's semi-finals tomorrow. That was what I was just coming on to. Not before 2:30 on Rod Laver Arena, following on from the mixed doubles final, which is Sanja Mirza, Rohan Bopanna and Luis Estefani and Rafael Matos. They open up Rod Laver Arena, but then not before 2:30, Karen Khachanov and Stefanos Tsitsipas. And then in the night session from 7:30, Novak Djokovic against Tommy Paul. Is everybody here of the mind that it's going to be a Djokovic-Tsitsipas final?
Yeah, I think so. Khachanov is, I think he's the new Diesel, isn't he? Like Stan Wawrinka used to be the Diesel. He does get stronger as it goes, but Tsitsipas, if he serves well, he needs to avoid getting drawn into those lengthy service games, I guess, but you just think he'll be too strong for Khachanov. And yeah, I don't see Tommy Paul, unfortunately for him. I don't think he's in the same league as Djokovic, but I guess as you said last night, at least he doesn't have any scar tissue.
Can anyone here make a case for anyone that's not Djokovic or Tsitsipas other than Reggie? Reggie in our newsletter predictions competition, who remains on zero after
Sorry,
11
Reggie.
days. No, Reggie's my favourite person in the world, David.
Is he?
Yes, he's my fig leaf of respectability. Were it not for Reggie, I'd be last. Reggie thinks Khachanov is going to win, so...
Go on, Reggie.
I think it's easier to make a case for Khachanov than it is Paul.
But you're not going to.
But I'm not going to. I mean, he's lost all five. He's played against Tsitsipas, and that's quite a compelling head-to-head. You know, that's quite a lot of matches.
Mm. I am still waiting for somebody to just make life stressful for Djokovic, because frankly Alex de Minaur and Andre Rublev have wholly failed in that pursuit, and I don't blame de Minaur. I think he was up against an unbeatable player that night, but Rublev, he let everybody down, I'm afraid, and I just feel as though he did, though.
It wasn't my feeling watching from the stands. I just felt that they were... I mean, Novak did say he played better against him and all, but I felt they were pretty close, those performances.
I just feel like, a little bit like we talk about with... Was it with Sabalenka or with Rebecca Sabalenka, that you might be able to get to her early? Mm. These matches were two games all, or whatever it was. And I know that's very, very early stages and everything, but you've got a little chance, because he is edgy, Djokovic, and he knows what's at stake. And now this whole thing kicking off, and the hamstring. We've seen him get pissed off in week one.
I think the hamstring is making him play better, because every time that he's got a ball on his racket, he just is looking to put it away.
He's looking to damage. I do see that point. But I feel as though if somebody could stay with him on the scoreboard, they keep letting him off the hook. There was a set last night that felt more or less not that one-sided, and yet it was 5-1. That doesn't make any sense, does it? But that's how the rallies were feeling. That's how the game scores were feeling. And yet, Djokovic was winning them all. You have to exert some scoreboard pressure. And if Tommy Paul could do that, at least we would have some questions asked of Novak Djokovic.
Yeah, I think the most disappointing thing about Rublev is that he told us pre-match that he didn't believe he could win. So, you know, sort of no matter how well Djokovic was playing, and I do agree he was excellent last night, even if not quite at the level he was against de Minaur, you just never felt like Rublev had the belief to capitalize on anything. And with Tommy Paul, I think it's a bit different, because as we said yesterday, he doesn't have that scar tissue. He's got other issues, you know, he's playing his first Grand Slam semi-final. It's going to be extremely tough for him, but
he is reminiscent of a World War II American GI, so anything feels possible.
It feels more possible than it did with Rublev.
Agreed. Low bar as that is.
Yeah.
Agreed. There is one last thing that I want to touch upon today, and that is that seven members of the original nine are here at Melbourne Park. They came in for an open press conference yesterday, which was available for anybody to go to. Chanda Rubin brilliantly hosted it and asked each of them some questions, and then it was opened up to the floor. It was a little chaotic, but it was very, very good fun. And then today, those seven members of the original nine were honoured on court on the Rod Laver Arena before the start of the women's semi-finals. There was Matt and I got there at 7, which was the advertised time for this presentation, and somehow we found ourselves in a sort of mini Katy Perry tribute concert, which was not what we'd signed up for at all. There was a performance by the cast of And Juliet, the West End show, and it was the Katy Perry song Raw. Anyway, it was fine, but it was not the original nine as we thought it was going to be. But anyway, the original nine did eventually come out. They were announced onto court. The seven members: Peaches Barkowitz, Rosie Casals, Judy Dalton, Billie Jean King, Kerry Melville Reed, Christy Pigeon, and Valerie Ziegenfuss, the two absent members, Nancy Ritchie and Julie Heldman. They were announced onto court. They were presented with a bunch of flowers each. They waved, and then they were asked to leave the court. And I don't want to be too harsh here, because I think it's brilliant that they have been honoured and that the Australian Open have done this. The reason they're doing it this year is because it's the 50th anniversary of the WTA. It was actually the 50th anniversary of the original nine doing their thing in 1970, but their breakaway tour, the Virginia Slim Circuit, eventually evolved into the WTA tour in 1973. And I hope the other slams, and frankly, every other tournament does something to honour the original nine. But it was really special that the seven of them made the effort to come all the way down here to Australia. And the reason they've done that is because they want people to understand and remember what they did and not take anything for granted, and to know their history. In the words of Billie Jean King, if you don't know your history, then you're in danger of repeating it. I think I've butchered Billie Jean King there. That's not the exact quote, is it?
Well, you've put me on the spot here. No, I think pretty much it.
That's pretty much it. And I just thought it was a bit of a missed opportunity, because they had a captive audience there inside the Rod Laver Arena, and there was no video presentation to explain who they were and the importance of what they did. There was no opportunity for any of them to speak. And that's why they're here, you know, to tell the story, to keep it in people's minds. And I guess I just wanted to mention them and the fact that they were here and what they did, because it is important, and what they did is incredible. Nine female tennis players risked everything in 1970 by breaking away from tennis's existing governing bodies that were screwing women over to form their own professional tour. As I said, the Virginia Slim Circuit, that evolved in 1973 to become the WTA Tour. And without these female tennis players, without these women, female tennis players would not be earning a living from the sport, let alone earning the millions that they do today. And as Billie Jean King said in that press conference yesterday, I hope they think about us when they receive a check.
I would co-sign, by the way, what you say about the presentation. I just felt there was a great opportunity there to give them some more time. They'd got a full house, captive audience, opportunity, maybe even to get some of the other players out and just tell everybody, remind everybody what happened back then, with a little video montage to tell the story, a bit like Channel 9 did in their news. They did a nice job. Let Billie Jean King speak. Let Rosie Casals speak a little bit. There's nothing...
Let Rosie Casals
exactly
speak. She is a hoot.
She's great fun.
At the end of the press conference yesterday, they were trying to wrap things up, and somebody somewhere said, Arina Sabalenka's waiting. And Rosie Casals said, she can wait.
and I think my favourite line was when Alana Kloss, who was sort of sitting in amongst the journalists, sort of said something, and Rosie Casale says, what's your name and affiliation, please?
So good.
Just a final thought on that. Thanks to Yelena Dokic, this did get some airtime, because in the interview with Elena Rybakina, she very forcefully and clearly and with detail made the point to Elena Rybakina that the women sitting in that president's box have enabled this opportunity for you, for women to be able to earn the living they are and to be able to play these matches on the stage. What would you like to say? And Rybakina took the baton and said some very nice words to make it clear that she's enormously grateful. And well done, Yelena Dokic, because she took over that narrative and made sure it was laid out for everybody.
She did brilliantly. But part of the point, I think, that the original nine are trying to make is that the players need to be educated about what they did, why they're here, the history of the WTA Tour. Why isn't there a WTA university, a rookie school? How long has Billie Jean King been calling for a rookie school in tennis?
I think the thing is, as well, by learning about it, I think it would make more of them active outside of the court. They would do
not
more.
Take things for granted.
Yeah, I mean, Billie Jean's always saying she. I mean, I know the media has changed and they've got their own channels these days and all this, but Billie Jean is always saying she'd do anything for the media because that's how we tell our story. I mean, it's just music to the ears, isn't it?
How many current top 10 players do you think would say that? I'd do anything for the media.
Well, maybe they don't think we'd do much for them. I don't know. We had a bit of a setback, I guess, when Naomi Osaka kind of had her moment of querying press conferences. But since then, a lot of them have actually said that how much they value the interaction with journalists. A lot of them do come in with a very open attitude. Some of them seem to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Some of them seem to feel it's a little bit like a free therapy session.
The new crop, actually, think of Świątek and Goff and several others. And I think, like you say, though, being face-to-face again matters. And, you know, we had 2 years of just doing these things on a Zoom call. And the players, Naomi, I think, expressed something that maybe other people didn't realize they were feeling, that they weren't enjoying that. We weren't really enjoying it. You know, we were just off to your spare room to go and have another Zoom call, you know, and it was relentless.
How can I disguise my pyjamas today?
and whereas we're in these rooms and you can have a conversation with them. I don't feel like we're being rushed through press conferences maybe like we used to be. I do think it's improved.
I think if you come to an event like this, they're extremely good.
Yeah.
I mean, not everyone wants, you know, we talked about Aryna Sabalenka wanting to keep her feelings to herself a little bit this year. Well, fine, but there's so many people who are prepared to answer any question about anything under the sun.
And this—I mean—there are a lot fewer of us at these events now as well. Because
this year has been very low.
The sheer
Australia
cost. I mean, it's so expensive.
The cost to get here has been greater than ever. So we've had, I think, about 20 members of the International Tennis Writers Association, which is quite a big fall off.
That's a fraction, isn't it?
Yeah. So there's not huge congestion in those interview rooms.
We have some sensations through to the men's doubles. Final, your favourites, David, Jason Kubler and Rinki Hijikata.
I love those guys. They're so talented. We're going to have to add sensations to tennis podcast terminology, aren't we, on the website?
They have beaten Marcel Granollers and Horacio Zaballos in the semi-finals today, and they'll play Hugo Nice from Monaco and Jan Zielinski from Poland. They beat Jeremy Shardy and Fabrice Martin in 3 sets today. Poor old Granollers Zaballos, Matt reminded me earlier, lost to the Special K's last year, so it's more sensation misery for them.
Yes, we were debating whether the Special K's are sensations. I'm not sure.
Well, they definitely
are.
Aren't now. Were they at the time?
I don't think they were at the time either, but I think they fall into the too high profile category to be a sensation.
I think Simon might need a sensations.
Well, Simon knows. Simon's been listening.
But that's what I would call a paradox, Matt.
Yes. Well, I didn't come up with the word sensation. John Millman is the original sensation.
If you're too successful, you cannot be a sensation.
We can introduce
Correct.
You to the radio reporter concerned.
You have to be far exceeding expectations to be a sensation.
Isn't that one of those notches on my annual appraisal?
You tell us. Did you?
I'd like to hear more about that, please.
Did you meet? Tell us.
Definitely,
yeah.
Definitely one
We've
of the grades.
We've got 5 minutes left, Simon. We can ditch the mascots. Tell us about your annual appraisal.
You have to get far exceeding expectations in order to get a pay rise.
And?
Well, I wouldn't want to go into the details.
Just while we're on Simon, I don't know if anyone else has been fascinated by this, but Simon has eaten a Haribo slower than anyone I have ever seen while we've been recording this podcast.
Nursing the dreg ends of a Haribo cherry for the last half hour.
I was concerned that I might be making chewing sounds. Into the microphone.
You don't normally do this.
So he's had it teetering
on his
fingers. I
normally have a microphone while I'm eating sweets.
Since Simon got all bashful on the pay rise, we do have time for mascots. We have our Australian Open mascot called Delia, and of course our Australian Open sponsor on location, premium hospitality and experience provider, and of course Steve Fogel's international tennis tours. David, you have your mascot Maisie.
Sorry about today, Maisie.
I've got Xenia. Went brilliantly. Our gap between us and Reggie continues to widen. Thank
she's
you,
also
Reggie.
Closed on me a bit alarming.
Matt has Darwin.
Yes, we got points today, Darwin.
Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks, Jamie, Drew and Hannah. They're our executive producers. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
We have Tom Sansonetti.
Oh.
Who is in Daniel Island, South Carolina, which is the site of the Charleston WTA event.
Lovely.
And Tom is Maisie's owner.
Oh.
Yeah, go on, Tom!
Yeah.
We should have put Tom on a day when David had had some success.
It's like every day I hear Matt go, we got some points today, Darwin. but Maisie, you have to put up with me. Tom, like Tom Gullickson.
Yes.
Yes, and Tom Ocker.
Yes.
Any other tennis Toms, Simon, want to join in?
Tommy Paul.
We took the main ones,
there
didn't
you go.
We?
See?
He's always been a Tommy, hasn't he? He hasn't had to do a rebrand like Stanislas Wawrinka or Andrew Murray or Daniel Evans.
Maybe at some point he'll go Thomas.
Don't think so. I think he's 25, like, you know. Anyway, thank you, Tom, and
Steffi
thank you,
Graf
Maisie.
Went Stephanie.
Did she?
Yeah. She now insists on being called Stephanie Graf.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
We've also got Nadia Hamya, who is in Paris.
Right, Nadia.
Nadia Podoroska.
Oh, that's quick.
Pulled that out of the bag.
Very good.
Nadia, wow.
Nadia's in Paris, you say?
Yes, which is scene of Nadia Podoroska's...
Only success.
Success, indeed.
Thank you, Nadia.
Thank you, Nadia.
And finally, we've got Kate Mulkey, who is in Bloomington, Minnesota.
Right, Kate. Right, Kate.
Kate. No, I've got loads of Katies on my mind.
Well, I mean... I would
Katie
say
Bolton?
Yes. I would say we can probably get
Katie
away with
Swan.
Our own Katie
McNally. Katie O'Brien.
Oh, I mean, come on! All of those at one stage or another have been called Kate.
Actually, I should say that this is a shout-out present to Kate from her two sisters, Val and Eve.
Right, Val and Eve.
Like Valerie Ziegenfuss. It's a stretch. It's a stretch. Anything
that's
else?
All I've got. No, that's all I've got.
I'm still trying to think of an Eve, but anyway, carry on.
Thank you. There must be a tennis Kate.
I think we have this every time we have a Kate. We desperately cling to all the Katies.
Yeah, and I'm all right with that.
Princess Kate Middleton plays tennis, doesn't she? I've seen her play tennis.
Yes.
With
Who
my own
she
eyes.
Who play like?
In fact, when you googled Kate tennis,
if Simon Briggs is Dan
Kate
Evans,
Middleton
what's Kate
tennis
Middleton?
Comes up.
Who is Kate Middleton?
Sort of every posh club player that went to private school that you've ever seen.
Are they all the same? Every private school player the same?
Well, you know, just sort of coached, fine, very, you know, no.
We don't make assumptions here or anything.
Who was she playing against?
I think we know that Kate Middleton went to private school.
Who was she playing against?
Emma Raducanu.
Yeah, I remember that. That's a big miss, isn't it? Emma Raducanu correspondent.
Yeah, you weren't there.
I should have remembered that. No, I think I was invited. I don't think anyone was invited from the written press, were they?
What? I don't. I mean, there wasn't much to write about.
Mm. Doesn't normally stop us.
On that note,
he's now finished his hair about it.
Do go and check out Steve Fogle's international tennis tours and the packages they're offering throughout 2023 and for the Australian Open 2024. Those packages have just been launched. I certainly can highly recommend a trip to Melbourne for the tennis. We're having a lovely time. Do sign up to the newsletter and enter the competition. Do follow us on Instagram, on Twitter.
Good newsletter stat tomorrow.
I've seen it. It's great. It's probably not one for Karen Hashinov fans or for Reggie, but it's brilliant. Do sign up and leave us an iTunes review. And most importantly, we'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.